What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The football pod with Paddy and Andy.
If you're over 30 in a football, that's half your age hitting you digs. Those lads are out partying at St. William Street later that night. I'm going home to have an ice bath.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
Joining us on the line to look ahead to this test series with the Springboks starting tomorrow evening, and you can hear it live and in full with this man on co-commentary indeed, is four-time Lion Brian O'Driscoll. Brian, you're very welcome back to the show.
Hi Richie, how are you?
Not too bad. Delving into your own experience, if we can do first, Brian, these last 24 hours or so before a first test, no matter the opposition, what was your head like? How did you busy yourself? What was the kind of atmosphere around the camp?
I think it all really depends on the timeline of your career, what part of the curve you're on. If you're early into becoming an international and then all of a sudden you're catapulted into the Lions, which was pretty much the case with me, towards like 21, might be 22, you're still learning the way and finding your routine and working out what works for you. We were also going through a real process of understanding what the expectation was of us. So it felt those formative years of professionalism were such a steep learning curve, and things probably changed over the course of that period of time. Like in the early days with Ireland, we used to have pizzas delivered in on a Friday night from like Domino's or from Four Star or wherever you could get a pizza locally. And we'd all go up to Paddy O'Reilly, our bagman's room, and we'd all have, two or three or four slices of Coke. You might wash it down with an old glass of Coke as well, for good measure. Until it kind of dawned on us that, the external factor of bringing these pizzas in could, everyone could get food poisoning as a collective. It wasn't because it was bad nutrition. It was just that we don't want everyone to go down because of eating the same thing, and we couldn't control that outside environment. Yeah. So to think about that happening in the early days to where they are now. Now, at the same time, I remember in Lions stores on Friday nights, we used to get chocolate biscuit cake. There's no harm in having something to look forward to the night before the game as well. So that used to be a little treat that replaced the pizzas. But I think as an individual, you find what works for you. It's about getting the captain's run done early in the morning on the Friday, and then just trying to relax. It's all about recovery. Making sure if cold baths are your thing, to go and do them. Making sure you're getting your massage, you're booked in with the masseuse for later on in the evening. I like to do another little bit of analysis on the opposition, just to make sure that all that information was fresh in my head. So I used to do that after dinner with one of the analysts and sit down for the guts of an hour and go through the individual player profiles to know, what their favorite foot was to step off, what their favorite arm carry was, whether it was a bumper fend or a straight fend, whether they were all about the outside break or whether they liked to chop back in off a particular foot. So all of those, that information you plugged into your server, and it came to you as you were out on the park, that it became second nature, as you almost understanding exactly what was going to happen before it did in real time. So all those little micro moments build up over the course of the week to allow you to have your best performance on a Saturday evening. And then it was just trying to be nice and chilled and relaxed, and cleaning your boots was a big part of it.
Oh, yeah?
In Irish setup, going up to Paddy O'Reilly's room or Bagman Ralla, and going up there and changing studs if that's what you needed, changing laces. He had everything laid out, anything you could possibly imagine you might need. So we go in there, and that was more of an experiential piece and just a calming influence and just a routine to get into to try and kill an hour and you know, you chew the fat with him. And I think that, you know, that's still been happening, obviously, on Lion stores. I think the English guys and the Welsh guys thought it very odd that this was a routine that the Irish boys brought in. But I think, you know, they took it on themselves, and you used to see them regularly arriving in the night before games, even though it wasn't in their, you know, usual pre-match routine.
It seems like the last thing you wanted to do then was, in any way, shape or form, was to keep the brain idle.
Yeah, it's an individual thing, really, yeah. Isn't it? Because some people will have played the game over in their heads. Some people will have visualized exactly what they're going to do. That was never really my thing. I would have understood and focused on that out on the training ground, but I hated playing the game in advance of it. And I was more of an instinctive player, that I was able to switch in and switch out of kind of the right mental state to be in when you're when the ball is in play, or when you're away from the pitch, and when you're there to relax and you're there to chill out. And like I said, the video analysis piece, you got to plug yourself back in again, even though you're not on the training park. It's different. You're using a different part of your brain to make sure that you're focused, and you're soaking up all that information that's being provided to make sure that you can put it to good use the next day. But it's really just about, you know, trying to get yourself into as much of a relaxed state as you possibly can, and, you know, tire yourself out a little bit without doing a whole lot, to make sure that, you know, you're not counting sheep when you do put your head to the pillow.
Yeah, of course. Looking ahead to the game itself tomorrow evening, Warren Gatland obviously brought forward his team selection. That was probably brought about because of the leak to the Times during midweek. What was your initial reaction to that, well, match day 23, I guess, and has it altered since?
I have to say, you know, the pack, I think, almost selected itself, maybe with the exception of seeing Jack Conan in there. Doesn't mean I'm delighted for him, and I think it's won on merit. Gatland's talked about that. He's gone on good instinct this week. And, you know, maybe ordinarily before the tour, you might have thought that Toby Faletau would be the number eight in the first test match, but it hasn't transpired. Jack Conan's been very good. He's taken his opportunity, and likewise, I guess Toby Faletau hasn't quite done so. And he's picked on Jack's ability to give them, you know, that essential go forward, those hard yards. And he's one of the better ball carriers in Britain and Ireland. So expect a big display in that regard from him tomorrow. The rest of that pack, to be honest with you, maybe Luke Cowan-Dickie at the start. You might have thought Jamie George, but over the course of the tour, I think Luke Cowan-Dickie has made the number two jersey his own with some really top quality performances. His play in the loose has been exceptional, stealing, pilfering so much ball, but his darts have been good. His general ball carrying has been good. He looks fit. He's obviously the English now the English number one, so we shouldn't be shocked. But it looks like a pack that, you know, you might have considered being very close to it at the start of the tour. A couple of changes in the back line. I don't know if many people would have had, many people outside of Scotland, I should say, would have had Ali Price as the starting scrum half going into the tour. Do you know what? It really depends on what sort of game they're planning and playing. Gatland's talking about him being selected on the back of you know, him being a better running scrum half. Well, that's fine if they run the ball, but I have a feeling that there's going to be a hell of a lot of kicking in this game as well. And I do know that Conor Murray is a better box kicker than Ali Price, a better defensive player, albeit Ali Price has probably taken his opportunities a little bit better, shown a little bit more against weaker opposition. So if I was Conor Murray, considering being named tour captain in Alwyn Jones' absence and then finding himself on the bench, you wouldn't be overly happy, but he'll have a big impact to play in the game nonetheless. Bigger, obvious choice. And then the centre pairing of Henshaw and Daly. You know, Gatland really set a stall out early with Daly, didn't he? Picking him three times at outside centre. So it was no shock to see him in that jersey, because Owen Farrell's form has been pretty patchy. And Robbie Henshaw has had, you know, a solid couple of performances, but, you know, earned his position on the back of some outstanding form in the Six Nations. I think that That centre pairing is potentially exciting, albeit I do think Elliot Daly's being selected as much for his left foot, if not more, than his ball playing ability. So we'll have to wait and see how that pans out.
Like, that's an interesting thing about it, because we've heard Ronan was talking about the presence of left footers in there too. Last night on the show, he also brought up that point that it's probably going to be a kick fest tomorrow evening. The suggestion then that you're saying that Ali Price is in there because offensively he might be a bit better than Conor Murray at the moment, and certainly with Elliot Daly's ability to play on the wing and his go-forward ball coming through the centre, does that suggest that to you that the Lions are kind of happy for this talk of a kicking game to be going out into the ether, whereas in actual fact they've got plans for something rather different?
I guess it's very hard for them to go and... Sorry, there's a few things. So some of the way the tries they've scored and you know, the play they've been able to manufacture against some of the opposition would undoubtedly give them an inflated view as to maybe where they would be versus against proper opposition. Now, we got a sense of that in the South African A game as to what to expect this weekend. It's going to be very, very different. It's going to be incredibly attritional. There's going to be much less space than those provincial games. So what do you have to do? You've got to try and, you know, when you run out of ideas or where you're getting smothered defence, which this South African defence is, you've got to go to the air. You've got to go to the cross kick, where it still can be an attacking weapon, but you have to think outside the box a little bit rather than just feeling as though it'll be ball in hand and playing a possession game. I think there'll be a huge amount of kicking. And that's, I guess, why I'm a bit surprised that Liam Williams hasn't found himself on the left wing instead of Van der Merwe. I think that is, you know, besides the fact that he's matched up against Cheslin Kolbe, I think, and I said it before the tour, I am nervous around Van der Merwe's understanding of defensive systems and being able to read play in real time. And we're talking about arguably the best player in the world at the moment in Cheslin Kolbe. He could make anyone look silly.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about him missing tackles. I'm worried about him missing reads of understanding who his personnel are, and that can be catastrophic versus scramble being able to make up for a missed challenge. I think if you pick the wrong guy, that often leads to line breaks and good sides put them away. So I'll be watching with real interest as to how Van der Merwe manages to deal without the ball, you know, considering what's going to be coming at him.
Can I ask you to expand on that a little bit? What makes you so nervous about his defensive capabilities?
I just watched him against Ireland. I don't think it's the part of his game that is really natural to him. This guy is a really good athlete. He's strong and abrasive and carries really hard. But, you know, some guys are like that and are able to manage an international level, but can just get caught out at the very highest level. Whereas you need to be a ball player. You need to understand and read the game extremely well. And I don't think that is his strength. I think comparatively, someone like Liam Williams reads the game brilliantly. I think Watson is probably a combination of the two. He's this phenomenal athlete, but still reads the game quite well. And that's why I'd have had Liam Williams in there. If it is going to be a little bit of a kick fest and the ball is going to come down his throat as well, very good. Very good in the air. You know, I think he's on his Twitter bio is a self-professed bomb
diffuser.
So thank you. He is great in the air and he gives you huge confidence with that. But he's sitting on the bench now, and Faf de Klerk and Pollard will be pinging those corners and will go to the air. And Mapimbi's decent in the air. He's a big guy. Kolbe, you know, even though he's diminutive in size, has you know, phenomenal spring and will get up and challenge. They even use him for some of the kickoffs. So it just shows his capability of catching ball up, you know, above his head and getting up above bigger men. So I do think that it's a strange decision, and there feels like there's a fair bit of Gregor Townsend in one or two of those.
Yeah, the actual team selection itself as a whole, like there is that line that went about that Gatland said this was the hardest team selection he's had in his entire career. There's the other part of that, which was that all of the coaching team came in on Monday with entirely different match day 23s to one another. Nobody came away with, I don't think, anything close to what they'd gone in with in terms of their 23. That to me suggests that they're all seeing something either slightly different on the training pitch from the players, they're seeing something slightly different from the outings that they've had so far, or that they view South Africa differently. I'm not asking for everybody to be yes men in all this, but you would think that there would be some element of cohesion among the coaching staff as regards what they've seen so far.
Yeah, it would be a bit of a concern, wouldn't it, that they are seeing things very differently, and I'm sure in some cases they are promoting their own. You can't shoot them for that. I do think that that's, you know, human instinct to work with guys that you've worked with previously. It happened with Joe Schmidt when he came into the Irish job, that he picked an awful lot of Leinster players initially because he had confidence with them, he had won with them, and he knew what they could deliver. And particularly on the individuals, say, for instance, in Gregor Townsend's case, the guys that he hasn't trained before or hasn't had a squad involvement with before outside of Scotland, if you didn't impress him immediately, you know, his natural instinct would be revert back to the guys that he does know, that it did a job for him in the Six Nations and big wins against England and France. You need that in any team selection in the Lions. You need guys going in to bat for you. And, you know, from an Irish perspective, you know, Robin McBride is there, you know, at Leinster, but is he fighting tooth and nail for certain personnel to be getting in and ahead of others? I don't know, but it does feel as though, you know, certain guys, I'm not saying they have an agenda, I'm just saying that they see things differently and are putting their point across. And the fact that, you know, it's a massively different team across the board from the ones that each of the individual coaches would have selected, you know, make you think that, you know, is there going to be the cohesion that is necessitated to play a test match? I'd be nervous around that.
Yeah, and the cohesion thing is something else when we bring in, there was a brilliant graphic in today's Independent, Rory O'Connor put it together about the combinations that have played so far together on this Lions tour, and the only previous experience of a combination that will be starting tomorrow that they've had so far in this tour among the, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, was Elliot Daly and Robbie Henshaw in the centre. Like, everything else is new, brand new. Like, there's a brand new front row. Granted, Luke Owen-Dickie and Ty Furlong played together against the Stormers, but other than that, it's been one of that three playing in the games. We've seen Maro Itoje and Alwyn Jones obviously play together in 2017. I don't think the fear factor will be there with them necessarily, but there is that question mark over the halfbacks with Bigger and Price. There is that question mark over a back three that hasn't played together at all. We've had two of the three play together in two matches, but nothing beyond that. And then you have that back row as well, with Jack Conan slotting into number 8 alongside Courtney Laws, who, and this isn't unusual for him, because he's mentioned before, and he's mentioned it in his column this week, that it happened, I think, 4 years ago, whereby he was only involved in one of the matches going into the first test and had to get assurances from Warren Gatland that he's going to be okay. But that lack of gel, like, we'd had many conversations, both with yourself and sundry other pundits heading into this tour, that say you want to get your combinations right. Even Gatland would have said it himself, he wants to have a look at the combinations that are going to work for a test. And yet, here we are with only one combination on that field, having worked together before.
Yeah, it's surprising. It does concern you. I guess the one thing is that sometimes you can shrug your shoulders a little bit and say, well, isn't that Lions rugby? And that, you know, you have the best players in the world, and some guys will click and other guys won't. It's just, you usually have a sense of that before the first test. And, you know, it is surprising to hear that they haven't managed other combinations. You think about the need for, you know, front row unity. The second row obviously will look after itself. You know, back row, again, maybe not as nervous. Halfback, I think that's a big one. The fact that Ali Price hasn't managed to play a game or certainly start a game with Dan Bigger would make me a little bit nervous for sure. We saw Ali Price struggling with Owen Farrell early on in the tour, where they just couldn't get on the same page. And it took them into the second half of that performance. I think it was one of the games against the Sharks where they, you know, finally clicked a little bit better than they had been. But I wouldn't say they were fantastic. There's definitely going to be a nervousness around how that connect is going to work. I think Henshaw and Daly I'd be less nervous around, because they're they both read the game very well. You know, a week together in training before this game will have has stood to them. And then the back three probably less important because Stuart Hogg will have played with Van der Merwe in Scotland, and then you know, Watson is a clever footballer, and then Liam Williams has come into that environment and has played with those before in previous Lions games. So yeah, the halfback one is the most concerning one as to who's going to really take ownership of that. And you would imagine it'll be Dan Biggar.
Yeah, you're looking for a big game from him. Speak to us more about Elliot Daly. Him playing at outside centre has been a Warren Gatland project, obviously, because by nature and by trade, he'd be a winger. You'd have a fair deal of insight of wearing that number 13 on a Lions tour. Has he got the tools to make that work tomorrow and beyond?
He's got this incredible speed, doesn't he, and an ability to get somewhere an awful lot quicker, be it with ball in hand or defensively. I guess the question marks will be around the physicality. Can he bring that to his game? I don't have any of those concerns with Robbie Henshaw. But as you know, brilliant some of the attributes that Elliot Daly possesses, I guess that's the one part that I'm not fully sure on. I saw him falling off one or two tackles last week, you know, a bit disappointing. And he's playing against one of, you know, two of the most powerful centres around in Damien Delande and Lucanio. They are big men and uncompromising and destructive going forward, very physical in defence going back too. So I think Elliot Daly will have to use all of his footballing ability and nous and understanding what depth to take when in attack, when to give himself time to thread some of those balls through. I do think, you know, looking at things and Willy Larue, he closes the gate extremely quickly on phase play, but particularly on first phase. And I do think that there's a great opportunity for Elliot Daly to, you know, hold enough depth, but then nudge the ball through and you know, give his wingers and fullback something to chase in the corner as the blind wing for South Africa comes across and tries to mop things up. So that is something to keep an eye out for. He closed the gate because they play a hard four up. It can expose you as a fullback. Lots of fullbacks would prefer to close the gate. And when I say that, I mean by shutting the last man down. Winger plays in and then often fullback has the last man. The last thing you want to do on a four up is then for the fullback to play very deep and invite someone to come on if you do get a corner. So as soon as South Africa are playing that hard four up, Willy Larue has to come up and play hard himself. And that's where that blind winger and Faf de Klerk's covering in behind will be essential to them, making sure their scramble's very good if that Elliot Daly or that Robbie Henshaw nudge through comes into effect.
Henshaw's going to have a helping hand, obviously, in what Duhan van der Merwe does on that side of the pitch, because Cheslin Colby, as you mentioned, like he's been mentioned as like Ronan called him, like the Messi of rugby. He's absolutely exceptional. I've seen a couple of mentions of how to counter him. Like, you can't necessarily allow him to play with both shoulders going towards the post, because he will kill you, and he can, you know, almost snap his ankles to try and get around players. What is the best way to counteract what he has to offer?
Well, I'm intrigued to know who came up with these options on how to defend them, because as of yet, I have not seen anyone in World Rugby being able to defend them one-on-one. It's a collective job against them. It's defending in threes minimum, and he is the arch poacher of identifying when a defence is struggling, when they've pushed too hard. And it's quite unusual for even the best players with the best footwork in the world to have an ability to step in the air the way he does. And whatever he does, he mesmerizes you with his hitch kick in the air. And it's his ability to create immediate speed once he hits the ground, be it, you know, going the same direction or when he chops off either right or left foot with equal comfort. And we saw that against Owen Farrell in the World Cup final, where it looks as though he's going to be burnt on the outside, and then that phenomenal right foot chop, but then not losing an inch of speed. His acceleration is phenomenal, and you know that's the thing. You wait for a fraction of a second for one of those steps to come, and he just gasses you on the outside, as we saw in the South African A game against Harris, who's one of the best defenders around at the moment. So he is absolutely undefendable if you're going to do it in ones and twos. It's a collective and a team role, and if he gets one-on-one opportunities, particularly with his offloading game, if he doesn't create the scores, you know, for himself, he'll create them for others, as he did with Lucanu Am as well in that South African A game.
Yeah. Do you buy much of Gatland's talk that they dented the Springboks' ego in some of the things that they did in that A game? It seems to be something that I'm not necessarily, if I'm a head coach of the opposition, I'd love to hear that kind of stuff, because that's the stuff that would light a fire under your players necessarily. Like, it's not atypical of Warren Gatland, but I'm not sure it would have full grounding in what we saw against that Springbok A side.
Yeah, I think that that's probably a little bit misplaced, because if you look at them, you know, not conceding when they were down to 13, when the Lions just hammered away at their line just before half time. Yes, they did eventually get across with the pick and jam, but you know, South Africans have huge pride in their goal line defence, and they defend it like their life is on the line. And it's almost a slur on their personality if you do manage to cross the whitewash when they're giving it their all. And you know, this team's World Cup success was built on a suffocating defence with a great kicking game, and they are not going to change anything. They are going to be in the Lions' faces. They're going to give them no time to play, because I do feel as though the creativity in the Lions is significantly greater than in South Africa. But yet the one-on-one ability of the likes of Colby, of Mpimpi, is better, if you know, better than most of the Lions, maybe with the exception of Watson, who can do some fantastic things as an individual. But I do feel as though they're going to be run sealed. We're going to get what it says on the tin, and they're not going to change anything. It's going to be ferociously physical. They're going to come around the corner, and can you match it? And if they do match, if you do match it, they'll go to the air. They'll look for contestables. And then what they'll do is they'll try to get to midfield rooks, and they'll get Willy Larue on one side and Pollard on the other side. And that's when they'll try and bring in their wingers with one-on-one or even two-on-one. And they will back their wingers with the ability to be able to break those tackles, get offloads. And it'll be 1-2 scores. This isn't going to be a tri-fest, yeah. I don't think. This is going to be a pretty tight game, with scoreboards being ticked over, with penalties being given away. And then a try or two, and that will be the difference between winner and loser.
We've talked massively, obviously, about the Lions selection and, you know, the different people who've been left out, the people who've been included. Clearly, there's an ability to pivot and to change should things go not necessarily wrong this weekend, but if something needs tweaking, something can be tweaked. A player can be brought in, a player can be switched out. Whereas South Africa leans so heavily on the fact that they have this cohesion of the same, I think it's like 17 players who were involved on Saturday, played in the World Cup final 2 years ago now at this stage. They've only played a couple of games since. In reality, they've had several of the squad in recent weeks contract COVID-19. Like, putting your, you know, crystal ball in front of you, can you see that level of physicality being sustained by the Springboks throughout three successive tests in three successive weeks?
Well, the big thing, the question, Richie, is can they do it in the first test? Whatever, yeah, about weeks two and three, but because they will be better for another game under their belt of test match intensity. Whereas, you know, with respect to Georgia, the intensity, yes, they came at them and it was great for a hit out, but that's not world-class opposition that you're looking to, you know, build your fitness base around. They will have gotten a lot out of the South African game, those players that did play in it. But the reality is, and if you look back to 2009 as well, even when in the first test, when they got up to a 19-7 lead, they started to run out a little bit of puff in the last 15 minutes. And I know that that's 12 years ago, but that feels like it's going to be all the more heightened on the back of their lack of game time in recent years since that World Cup final. So for me, it's a massive opportunity for the Lions. If they can hold out in the first 50 minutes and not, you know, go behind, you know, more than a score, I feel as though they have the fitness to be able to properly compete in the last 15 minutes and maybe take advantage of a struggling pack of forwards, even with that bench coming off. And if you look at that front row, like, it's arguably better than the starting front row. But it does feel like this Lions team will have engines to go 80 minutes and have had numerous test matches in recent months, whereas you can't dig into the well if it's not there, if you haven't built that baseline. And South Africa haven't done that through no fault of their own. And the reality is that they will find that last quarter of the game excruciating, particularly if the game is in the balance, because I do think the Lions have the edge. And that's what makes this first test the most important from a Lions perspective. They could get one up here, it's game on. I think if they lose that first one, they could be in trouble.
Yeah, and our coverage of the Lions Tour is brought to you in association with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. Brian, but on that point, it makes the inclusion of Conor Murray, Owen Farrell and Liam Williams on the Lions bench seem all the more crucial, because if you do have a Springbok side that's puffing for wind a little bit in those last 25 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, bringing those three off the bench, like, that's the last thing a South African defence is going to want to see.
That's true. It's true that they will counter it by saying that, you know, they've got four World Cup winners to come into their pack. The two Janchis, you know, were involved in the World Cup squad, and Willemse, who, you know, huge things are thought of him. It hasn't quite transpired for him. You know, when he was in Saracens, speaking to some of the fitness staff there, said this guy is going to be world class. So he's capable of doing something magical. But it is comforting knowing that you have the control aspect of Murray, Farrell and Williams come in if the ship needs steadying. But are they the players to come on if you're chasing the game and you're looking for a little bit of X factor? Maybe not quite as much. But I like the look of the balance of that Lions, you know, subs bench. Tadhg Byrne, unlucky maybe not to be in the test team, although I thought he'd always go for a big number six. The fact that he plays back row and second row makes him an obvious choice in the 23. Watson, you know, people will say, unlucky to miss out. I think Tom Curry's been the standout performer in the Lions so far and is almost one of the first on the team sheet. And then, you know, you're not going to miss an awful lot in Sinclair. He was the difference in that World Cup final with England. You know, people forgot that he went off after 2 minutes and Dan Cole came on and got manhandled by the beast. That I don't think that would have happened with Kyle Sinclair. He's matured an awful as a player and as a person, and I think he's a lovely person to come in and plug in any hole that Tadhg Furlong leaves. So I think it's going to be a close game. This is going to be, you know, go down to the wire. I just feel as though in this one, I've changed opinion. I think the Lions may have the edge just because of that superior fitness level.
Is it literally just the fitness level? Is that because they've had so many games now to prepare?
Yeah.
They've had no noticeable really COVID issues. Like, you don't know what kind of, like, you would figure if they're passing him fit, Sia Khaleesi and Ndima Pimpi are going to be fine to play, and Oxenche, because they've all come back from isolation. But everybody reacts to this thing differently. And we've heard it from several different sports now at this stage, that everybody comes back and you don't know, essentially, until you're out in battle conditions, how your lungs or how the rest of your body is going to react to a battle with COVID. It's not a question mark that you want hanging over your team, whereas the Lions don't have that.
No, they don't. And like, if you're a couple of percent off a test match, it feels way more. Because that, and certainly at this level, it feels, that would feel so significant. You want to be at the very top of your game, and particularly with their fitness levels, if they're struggling initially and then they have, you know, the potential effects of a longer COVID hanging over them too, and that knocks another 5 or 10% off fitness levels, that will be the difference. And I'm sure, you know, they're World Cup winners, mentally very tough, but you can only fight you know, things to a certain degree. Fortunately, I haven't had COVID, so I don't know the aftermath of what that feels like. But I don't think these individuals properly know what it's going to be like playing a test match, having just recovered in the last 10 days from it. So you're going to know an awful lot within 10 or 15 minutes as to who's sucking diesel and who's ready to go for the 80.
They might be helped out by their water boy on the pitch as well, the South Africans, because he seems to have a bit of experience.
Yeah, he does. We'll all be keeping an eye to make sure he actually has some water in his hand this time round. But you know, different people have made lots of comments about, oh, it's not right. The message has been passed on. You got to squeeze the rules to the nth degree. And if your water boy is allowed to be your head coach and be mic'd up, you know, provided he's actually bringing out water, there's nothing you can say, to the best of my knowledge. So let them at it, and good luck if that's the difference in getting those messages from your head coach rather than via an actual water boy delivering a message from a coach in the stand.
Well, I think it was Craig Ray on Twitter today said Neil Jenkins on the sideline with his earpiece is hardly listening to the shipping forecast. He's getting instructions from up in the stand to pass out onto the pitch as well. So it's, you know, it's horses for courses, six of one, half a dozen of the other. A note as well on Jack Conan, we touched on him there at the start of this, Brian, it's just a remarkable story arc for him to be in the depths of injury hell where he was, going 16 months without a game, to come back in and perform so well that he's starting the first Lions test tomorrow.
It's built on, people say on you know, lots of performances for Leinster, and but ultimately it's built on one massive performance against England, where physically he imposed himself, and I think that's what caught Warren Gatland's eye. And then even in the defeat against La Rochelle, he was probably one of the shining lights for Leinster, where he still gave that go forward, which is vital to, you know, taking on a bully at their game. You've got to be physical, you've got to be confrontation, you've got to have someone that's able to do what they're doing to you. And I think Jack Conan ticks all those boxes. He's really good in the wide channels where they've been trying to use him. He's relatively quick. He's got good hands. His offloading game has really improved. And you see his tackle completions. I think that might be the difference between him and Toby Faletau, in that he's finishing off his tackle. So on the defensive side of things, he's shirked none of his responsibilities. And I think he's, you know, he's someone that you thought maybe he'll just be a tourist, but he's fully earned his right to start in this first test. I hope he goes well.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, Brian, we have to get a score prediction from you, or even just a general forecast for the game, how you think it'll go and how, you know, this one will be settled on Saturday.
Yeah, just crazy physical from the off. I hope that we're not going to have it, you know, manipulated in any way through yellow cards or particularly red cards, because I think it's not going to be for the faint-hearted. And if someone, you know, misses a shot or tries to stamp their authority and their timing is off, you know, they're going to be gone, and that could impact a game significantly, particularly if it happens in the first half an hour or 40 minutes. So I feel as though it'll be a bit of a chess match. They'll tease each other out. There'll be penalties given. There'll be penalties kicked. There'll be very little rugby played in one another's half. And then I do feel as though it might be just left to a moment of magic, be it a Cheslin or a Stuart Hogg or an Anthony Watson, to be the difference. I feel as though I've swung around. I thought South Africa were going to win the series 2-1, but I do think that the Lions might win this first one and really put it up to South Africa. So I'm going to go with a Lions victory just by 3 or 4 points, because I do think over the course of the three games, there's going to be very little between these two sides.
Listen, Brian, you teed it up beautifully. Thanks a million for your time this evening as well. We'll let you go. And Brian will be on co-commentary for that first Lions test right here on OTB Sports and indeed on News Talk. Build up from 4 p.m. on Saturday's Off the Ball, and then, of course, kick off at 5 o'clock. Neil Tracy is going to be the man on the mic for that one as well. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers, Rajit.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
Well, so far you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts,
and download the OTB Sports app.